Hey guys, I'm Alex Philbrick, and this is Phil in the Gap, part of Vendetta Sports Podcast Network. Don't forget to subscribe to Phil in the Gap on iTunes. It is super easy. All you have to do is type in Phil in the Gap in the search bar on the Apple Podcast app, click on our show, then click subscribe. You could even just Google Phil in the Gap and find it that way if you'd rather do that. Today's episode is exciting. We have Josh McQuistion joining the show. Josh is the co-publisher slash editor for Soonerscoop.com. Soonerscoop is part of Rivals.com, which a lot of you are probably more familiar with. Josh does a great job covering Oklahoma football and the recruiting world. With the Oklahoma spring game taking place this past weekend, we wanted to hit some of those highlights from the game and from the recruiting side of it with Josh. If you miss college football like I do, make sure you go check out our last episode with Edward Ashoff of ESPN. Edward and I covered a lot of different topics across the country, so give it a listen and get your college football fix there. We're really excited, as I said, about this show. But before that, we wanted to... I was just going to give some solo thoughts on the whole Dez Bryant situation. So we'll do that first, and then we'll have our interview with Josh from Soonerscoop.com. Before we get into our interview with Josh, I wanted to share some thoughts on this whole Dez Bryant situation. On Friday, Dez was released by the Cowboys after having a meeting with Jerry Jones, and that makes him a free agent. Free agency is pretty much done, and now a big name is on the market, so that's pretty interesting and unusual. But Dez was set to count $16.5 million against the cap for the Cowboys in 2018, but with the release, it saves the Cowboys about $8.5 million in cap space. The thing that's still funny about it to me is to think that they're still going to pay somebody to $8 million to not play for them is pretty crazy, especially somebody with the name of Dez Bryant. But that's where we stand now. Everybody knows about, you know, Dez's outburst and his quote unquote attitude thing, and a lot of that's probably misunderstood, and a lot of it is probably warranted at the same time. But more so to me is just his declining play. In the last three seasons, he has not reached 1,000 yards receiving. He has not had a 70 catch season, and he's recorded his lowest three seasons as far as catch percentage goes of his career. From 2012 to 2014, Dez was as good as any wide receiver in the entire NFL. In three seasons, he had over 3,900 yards. He had 41 touchdowns. He had 271 catches. That's an insane three-season stretch. That's as good as you're going to find. That's Hall of Fame level. He led the league in touchdowns in that 2014 season with 16 touchdowns. That's where he became Dez Bryant, was in those three seasons. One interesting note about those three seasons to me is that Tony Romo was the quarterback for all three of those years. We know Dak Prescott has been his quarterback for the past two seasons. And it seems like there's been a disconnect between those two on the field. And part of that is just due to Dez declining, I think. Another part of that is just being Tony's game fits Dez's game a little bit better for sure. But, I never really saw that connection that he had with Tony, with Dak Prescott. So I think that's another reason that the Cowboys were okay with moving on from him, seeing as Dak is their quarterback of the future. But, you know, we still saw flashes of old Dez. Every once in a while, you know, he would make one of those plays that we were accustomed to seeing from him. But on a consistent basis, he struggled to get open. He didn't win those jump balls like he used to. He wasn't the red zone threat that he used to be. He didn't play with that same violent athleticism that we were used to seeing from Dez, where he could just take a slant, break a couple tackles, and run for 30 yards. We saw that less and less over the past three seasons. And I've been saying for a while now that the Cowboys need wide receiver help. During the middle of last season, it was obvious that, you know, this whole Dez thing wasn't just he needed time to get used to playing with Dak. It was more that he might just be declining, and obviously with the release of him, that need for the Cowboys is a lot more urgent and a lot greater. Even with Dez not being what he once was, he was still at least somewhat of a threat and had that potential to be a game-breaking wide receiver on any given day or any given drive or whatever. But the problem for Dallas is there's not this wide receiver class in the draft is not that great. I don't really like any of the top guys that much, and especially to pick them in the first round. I don't think really any of them have a future as a number one wide receiver in the NFL. I think the ceiling on some of these top guys is to be a number two receiver in their career. But so it's not a good year to have to really need to pick a wide receiver, especially early. As I mentioned a minute ago, free agency is pretty much over. So there's nowhere to get help in that area. They signed Allen Hurns from the Jags. But as I mentioned on a previous podcast, you know, at best he's your number two, and he's probably more of a number three type receiver. So he was seemed like he was signed to help the offense with Dez Bryant there. But now that he's gone, if he's your number one or two guy that you're relying on, that's kind of a scary situation if you're a Cowboys fan. We know they have the reliability of Jason Witten, but he's really old, and I mean, he's going to the Hall of Fame someday, but he can't be your focal point of your passing game. They'll get Ezekiel Elliott back, which will obviously help the entire offense, passing game and running game, because he can catch the ball pretty well out of the backfield, and a good running game only helps your passing game. So that part will help, but you still have to have guys on the outside. You can't be relying on Terrence Williams and Allen Hurns and Cole Beasley and Ryan Switzer to be your main receivers, your only receivers. So I look for the Cowboys to still draft a receiver in the first round, even though I don't really like any of the guys to go that early. I think the Cowboys will do it if they could get Calvin Ridley, if he falls to them in the first round. I think that would actually be a pretty good pick. I still think he's going to be at best number two receiver in his career, but I think he has the most potential perhaps of the guys in this draft class. I would think that's what the Cowboys are hoping for, but it'll definitely be interesting to see what they do. And it'll be also interesting to see how Dak Prescott handles this. I would assume that this means that he's going to have to take a bigger load on as far as offensive responsibility goes. He's not going to be able to, you know, be coddled as much, and they're going to have to rely on him to be a game-breaking player and guy who carries the team at quarterback instead of just kind of manages the team. So I'll be interested to see what the Cowboys do, as I know many of you will be. So now that we have the Dez Bryant situation out of the way, let's turn our focus to Josh from Soonerscoop.com. We're going to talk to him about the OU spring game, some of the recruiting that's gone on around that spring game this past weekend. I hope you guys enjoy the interview. I'm joined now by Josh McQuistion of Soonerscoop.com, part of Rivals.com. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Alex. I got to commend you. That's as good as anybody's done in an early run of my name in quite a while.
Well, thank you. I might have had some help before we started recording, but I'll still take the compliment. Josh covers Oklahoma football, specifically recruiting, but pretty much just anything to do with Oklahoma football for Sooner Scoop. And this past weekend was the Oklahoma spring game. It was a huge weekend for Lincoln Riley and the OU football program. Not only was it Coach Riley's first spring game as head coach, which we'll get to the game here in a little bit, but it was a very important weekend of recruiting for Oklahoma. They had a ton of official visitors and unofficial visitors, mostly all of them blue chip guys. If you follow the recruiting world at all, you know that they had it was a huge success. They've received 11 commitments since Friday morning. Nine of them are known. We're still waiting to hear who two of them are. But not only just the sheer number of commitments they got, but they got blue chip guys. I mean, on Rivals.com, I know you guys had them number 12 before Friday, and now they're number one. They've moved to number one on 24/7 as well for 2019 class. They've added five stars like Theo Weiss Jr., Arjaya Henderson, Jamal Morris, and Jerrion Jones, a couple of four-star safeties. So they're number one right now. How good of a chance do you think this class has at finishing number one when it's all said and done?
Well, you have to say there's a chance. And that's not something I generally say with Oklahoma just because I think there are so many things that make it difficult for Oklahoma. I think a lot of cases Texas high school talent is undervalued as it relates to Southeastern Conference talent, or, you know, Southeastern area, and likewise in Oklahoma. I mean, it's very rare that there are more than four or five four-stars in the state of Oklahoma. And as a guy that's covered the state for 20 years and covered national recruiting for the same amount of time, that's usually a little unfair to the state. I think Oklahoma is a lot better as far as talent producing than it often gets credit for. But it's going to come down to what Oklahoma can do coming forward. I mean, 2 5-stars, that's great. They need to land one or two more. They need to stay in on some other elite guys, land a lot of Rivals 100, Rivals 250 guys. So it's really going to come down to what Oklahoma can do going forward. But to me, there's no question that there is a chance for Oklahoma to do that. And that's frankly not something I would have said a week ago.
Yeah, and I mean, I just mentioned all the, you know, commitments that they got this past weekend and how big of a weekend it was. And I know you've covered their recruiting, the recruiting side of things for a while now. Have you ever seen a weekend as successful for, specifically for OU as far as recruiting goes?
Nothing really even close. I mean, really the only weekends you can say that of are some of the previous ones. You know, last spring's Champ U barbecue that went really well for Oklahoma. They got 3 commitments out of that, a couple more that came later on, and Sean White and Daryl Simpson, some other guys like that. But, and then you throw in last year's Texas Tech game when they got, you know, eventually landed Brendan Radley Hiles and Ronnie Perkins and some of those guys, and also, again, Deshaun White. So, you know, there is a lot to see there. That's been the biggest change to me from Lincoln Riley, from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley, is you've seen more success on these big weekends. In Stoops' tenure, there was a more it was more passive in the way they recruited. They weren't pushing for commitments. They didn't want guys to commit until they came to it on their own. And that's fine. That's a good policy, and I think that's why you didn't see a lot of decommitments in Bob's era. You're going to see more in Lincoln's, but at the same time, they've come to the understanding that if the guy's even half on the boat, that's better than not at all. So I think that's how they've kind of come to look at it, and I think it's why you're seeing these weekends start to mean more and Oklahoma starting to really push for guys.
Yeah, so before we move on from the recruiting aspect of it, for those that don't know, every time a player commits to OU, Lincoln Riley tweets the two eyes, the emoji that's two eyes looking to the side. So it's become a thing where if he tweets that, all OU fans are on edge. I'm just refreshing Twitter whenever that happens, like a crazy person trying to find out who it is. He tweeted two last night that haven't come out. I'm not going to ask you to tell us who they are. I know that's not going to happen. That's not fair to you. Are you able to say perhaps when we might hear who that is?
I think one of them we'll probably know within the next 24 hours. You know, here we sit on, you know, Wednesday afternoon. I would be surprised at this time Thursday if we didn't know. Now, with recruits, crazy stuff happens. You never count on anything, but that's my expectation. The other one is a little more open-ended. I think it could push into next week, but I don't think it's going to be one of these deals where we're still talking about it a month from now, wondering who that guy was. So okay. I think you'll know both of these fairly soon.
All right. Josh McQuistion of Soonerscoop.com here with us today. Let's turn more towards the actual game and the actual team for this season. So the number one storyline for this team is the quarterback battle, obviously. You know, Coach Riley is acting as if it's a totally pretty much even battle right now without any either quarterback Austin Kendall or Kyler Murray having any sort of significant edge. Whether that's true or not, you'll be able to you know, say whether it is better than I feel like it's probably Kyler Murray's job to lose. But you know, the wind was really, really bad in the spring game, which hurt the passing game. I thought it was, you know, it's a typical spring game. It's vanilla stuff. Not really going to see a whole lot. I think both guys showed signs of good things and showed signs of things that they need to work on. But are you on my side of the thought process that it's Kyler's job to lose? And will you be surprised if he's not the guy on week one?
I think it's his job to lose. And the only addendum I would make to that is that there is something to be said for it kind of feels like if anybody made a move over the weekend, I thought it was Austin Kendall. Mm-hmm. I thought he had the better of things. I thought he threw the ball around a little better. I thought he dealt with the wind and how bad the circumstances were a little better. Because let's face it, in Oklahoma, there's going to be days when it's cold and windy and crappy, and you just kind of have to find a way to get through that. And I thought he did a little better job, and I think maybe that lends itself to some of the narrative of Kyler Murray's a smaller guy, going to have smaller hands, going to have, you know, some of the issues you would associate with those kind of physical traits when it comes time to throw into that kind of scenario. So you wonder about that a little bit. I still don't think that that's going to change the final story. I think Kyler Murray will be the starter. I think it was good for Lincoln Riley, for Austin Kendall to have that solid of a showing, because there's every reason to think for Austin Kendall that, yes, you're still in this competition. Stay around until the fall, because obviously Oklahoma needs both these guys on campus. This is a really bad deal for Oklahoma if one of them were to lose the starting job and then choose to transfer. So then Oklahoma's left with whoever the starter is and incoming freshman Tanner Mordecai, who didn't even go through spring practices. Yeah. So you really get into a tricky spot there. So I think it's good for Oklahoma that it does look to be at least reasonably competitive. And the thing I will say for Kyler Murray, it sounds like I'm down on him. The thing you have to remember, he's going to be better in a game scenario when people have to get him to the ground than he is going to be in a, you know, against air competition where he's really not going to get hit. Nobody really has to tackle him, because that guy in the open field is like having a really elite slot receiver. I mean, his moves, his speed, he's really, really hard to corral. So if Oklahoma put some run stuff in for him and he really had to be caught and tackled, I think his numbers might have looked a little different on Saturday.
Yeah, I think so too. And one thing with Murray that's, it seems like just recently over the past week or so, it's being talked about is the potential of him playing, going pro in baseball. He's having a much better baseball season this year versus last year. And the option for him of going pro and taking that money, since he's eligible to go pro if he gets drafted, I didn't really think that was a possibility until the past week or so. Do you think that there's a – I mean, I guess there's got to be at least a slight chance that that happens, but is that something that that you feel OU football should be worried about, or that that's probably unlikely to happen?
You know, I think it's something that they have to be mindful of. I don't know that I would go so far as to say it's something they have to be worried about or anything like that, because I think at the end of the day, I would be surprised if Kyler Murray didn't want to say, I at least had 1 year as quarterback. I wanted to be that guy for 1 year. So, and he's going to think, okay, I'll come back next year. I mean, because Kyler Murray is a guy that's literally never not experienced success. Last year in baseball is probably the one time in his life when things just, for what, you know, for there was no peripheral reason that you can really make up. Something just wasn't right with his swing last year. You know, he just wasn't doing things the level he is accustomed to. And that's never really happened to him. So I'm sure he thinks next year would be even better. You know, maybe I can secure an even better draft spot, more money, that kind of thing. And then I can kind of make a decision, because I'll have the year at quarterback under my belt. I can kind of know what things are going to look like for my football future, those kind of things. So I think it's pretty unlikely that he would just cut ties with the program. Now, to say that he might sign a contract and then work it out to where, okay, I'm going to be in a, you know, farm system for a little while, and I'll come back and play football and try to do that like Kyle Parker from Clemson did years ago. Mm-hmm. I think that's possible, but to me, that's probably the scariest of the realistic scenarios, in my opinion, as far as Oklahoma would see it.
I got you. So one thing that's going to be a huge help for whoever's playing quarterback is the offensive line. The teams for the spring game were split up evenly, so it wasn't first team versus first team, second team versus second team like it usually is in a lot of spring games. But I thought both offensive lines looked like that could have been the starting offensive line for the team this year, and they would have been fine. Seems like there's legitimately 7 or 8 guys who would be really good starters, and whenever the 2018 class is on campus and this summer when they get you know, some other offensive lineman that they just signed, there might be 9 or 10 of those guys that could be starting potential guys. You know, Coach Biedenball has done a fantastic job. I think he's the most important coach outside of Riley on the staff. And the offensive line, it doesn't seem like it's going to take that much of a step back, even though it lost Orlando Brown and Eric Wren. It seems like they've just got depth for days. Do you think that the offensive line is going to be just as good as it was last year and just maul people up front?
I don't know that I would say it's going to be as good. I don't know that you can lose Orlando Brown and just replace that. I will say I think people that are expecting some sort of precipitous drop just really weren't paying attention. I think Bennett Powers is almost certainly the best guard in the Big 12. Bobby Evans, I think anybody that reads me, that knows me, follows me on Twitter, reads the site, you know, whatever medium you want to follow me in, knows that I think Bobby Evans was the best tackle on the roster last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to skip a beat. I think they're going to be perfectly fine. What's going to be interesting is just how they choose to work that tackle situation. At guard, they are super deep. At center, you've got the veteran Jonathan Alvarez, who's played a lot of football. You've got the young guy, Creed Humphrey, that a lot of people think is, you know, a someday Remington, you know, contender. I mean, he's going to be an elite center whenever it's his time. So I think they're going to be fine at center. Guard has three guys in Samia, Powers, and Ford that would start just about anywhere in the country. So you're just looking at that list, and you're like, that's great. Bobby Evans is probably a 10-year NFL guy, in my opinion. It's about figuring out what's going to be at the other tackle. We've heard a lot of talk about Cody Ford working, and I know he worked as first-team left tackle on Austin Kendall's offense. There's Adrian Ealy that was a big-time recruit, guy that has all the physical tools you're looking for. It's just about the light coming on for him and him starting to put it together. But, if you want to say that offensive line last year was a solid A-plus unit, you'll get no argument from me. It was very, very good. This year, I think you're talking B-plus, A-minus. Still really good. Still good enough to win you any game you play in. But I don't know that they will be quite as dominant because Orlando Brown could just physically overwhelm any defensive end he faced. And it was comical. Even watching him against the great group from Ohio State, those guys didn't have a chance against him. I mean, they were just overwhelmed from the first snap. And I think that's just something you're not going to be able to completely replicate.
And even in the Rose Bowl, one of the plays that stands out to me the most was when Orlando Brown, just on that long Rodney Anderson run early in the game, he just mows down Roquan Smith. Roquan made a great play to get back up and run about 40 yards down the field and make the tackle eventually. But that's the best linebacker in the country that he's just pushing to the ground with ease. But to your Bobby Evans point about him being possibly the best tackle on the team last year, I want to say he had the highest Pro Football Focus grade between him and Orlando Brown too. So Bobby Evans, he was great at right tackle last year. I know it's kind of assumed that he would just slide over to left tackle, but I mean, if they can keep him at right tackle where he's one of the best in the country already, and then plug somebody in that's capable at left, I feel like that would be the ideal situation for them. But regardless, I mean, the depth is just, it's crazy good, and I hope that continues, because I think that's probably the biggest key to Lincoln Riley's offense being as good as it has been. I mean, obviously quarterback play is important, but that offensive line can help that quarterback play a ton. Josh McQuistion here from Soonerscoop.com joining me. Josh, I just wanted to touch on one more thing before I let you go, and it was it's the amount of young players that OU has that they're hoping can contribute and make an impact right now. The whole roster is pretty young, but the last 2 years they've had top 10 recruiting classes, and it feels like both of those classes were focused a lot on defense. They really tried to get a lot of defensive guys, and they did. There's sophomores that we know are going to have an impact and have to be counted on, like Trey Norwood, Trey Brown, Kenneth Murray, Robert Barnes, among others. But there's incoming freshmen that they think maybe could help. Jalen Redmond, Ronnie Perkins, obviously Brendan Radley Hiles, who we'll talk about in a little bit more detail here coming up. But which other guys that are either freshmen or kind of unknown second-year guys do you think could emerge this season on the defense, or I guess on the offense too?
The guy that I really, you know, and everybody's focused on Brendan Radley Hiles, and you know, for those that out there that maybe are like, I kind of heard that name. You also may have heard Buki, and that's him as well. So either that they're interchangeable. Most everyone that knows him calls him Buki, so we'll go with that. There's no question. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, I tweeted during the spring game, if he's not one of OU's two best defenders next year, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah,
he is a guy with great instincts. He's a natural playmaker. He's one of those guys that when the game's in the balance in the fourth quarter, he finds a way to make a play. Like, that's the kind of player he is, and that's why he's so special. And I think that's what you're going to see. I mean, that's what you're going to – get from him, Oklahoma's going to find a way to get him on the field, whether it's a nickel, whether it's a corner, whether he has to play some free safety. Whatever it's going to be, that dude's going to be on the field a lot. And so I think you can kind of just assume he's going to be one of the guys you're talking about. The guy that I think quietly had a really good spring from people I talked to that really didn't get a lot to do is Ronnie Perkins. I think he's a guy that kind of got overlooked because of Jalen Redmond and Ron Tatum in state being such big recruits and being so well known. And, you know, just growing up in the shadow of the stadium, people kind of pay attention to those guys. Ronnie Perkins, a St. Louis guy, enrolled early, just like Redmond. When I talked to people when he committed, when he signed, there was a definite feeling of this guy is a guy that OU expects to come in and make an impact from day one. He'll be part of the rotation immediately. And I think, unlike Redmond and Tatum, who maybe have a little more upside, I don't think they were as ready as he was to be a difference maker. I think Ronnie was a lot more refined as a pass rusher, a lot more physically put together. Ron Tatum needs some time in the weight room. Mm-hmm. Jalen Redmond's a guy that's only played football really for 2 years. I mean, so there's a lot for those guys as far as learning curve to overcome. With him, I thought he was pretty plugged in already. And from what I talked to people in the spring, he is right on track, probably ahead of where they thought he was going to be. So I think everyone's very excited about Ronnie Perkins. You know, you kind of look around. I'm waiting for Trey Brown. You talk about a guy with all the physical tools at corner. He's big. He's strong. He's got all the speed in the world. I mean, if there's anybody on the team that can run with Kyler Murray, it's Trey Brown. And for Oklahoma to have a shot at him, to get him on the field, he's going to have to push somebody. I mean, obviously, you look at Jordan Parker's got starting experience. Parnell Motley's got starting experience. Brendan Radley Hiles is all the buzz. So there's a lot for him to get through. And, I've talked to people that are really happy with what Justin Broyles did this spring. So there are a lot of bodies for him to get through. But if you talk about a guy on that roster that has everything needed to eventually someday be a first-round NFL draft pick, it's Trey Brown. That's the guy. So if he can get to the level he needs to be, and Kerry Coates has talked about it, you know, the Oklahoma's defensive backs coach, he has mentioned, you know, this is a guy that if it comes together for him, there's no way we keep him off the field. So they're just waiting for all that to come together. And I think this spring you started to see moves in that direction for him. But obviously Oklahoma wants to see more.
Yeah, and the good thing for OU is that they have that depth at corner. You know, Trey Brown, while he has those physical tools, he also has experience. I mean, he had to be thrown into the fire last year as a true freshman, so hopefully that experience will help him take another step and really unlock those physical tools that you're talking about. And as far as Ronnie Perkins goes, I'm glad you mentioned him because I remember watching the Army All-American game, and obviously him and Tatum were playing in that game, and whenever I saw him, I'm like, man, that dude, he does not look like a high school player. Like, physically, he just looks like a guy who's already in college, playing college football. He's the most physically ready freshman, as you said, that I think that they have, especially on defense. But, you know, I can't help but talk about Buki a little bit more. As you said, he's all the buzz. All the reports from practice and spring ball say that he's been absolutely as advertised. I'll be shocked, like you said, if he's not starting from day one and one of the best players on defense from day one. And do you think I would be going too far to say that he could actually end up being somebody that changes the Lincoln Riley era? He's a guy who likes to recruit other guys. He seems like he's just got that. I mean, along with the play on the field, he's got that swagger. He's got that, you know, leadership. He wants to be that. He wants to be the guy. Fans love him, and I just think he's a perfect fit for a team that needs somebody on defense that can be the guy and then back it up on the field. Because it seems like they have a couple guys who want to be the guy, but their play can't quite back it up as of now, whereas Buki wants to be that and can back it up on the field. So I know that's kind of a long-winded question, but I guess I feel like he could potentially be somebody that changes the course of the Lincoln Riley era for the next few years. Do you think that's possibly a fair assessment, or maybe going a little bit too far?
I think there's a case to be made for that. There is, to anyone who's been around him and been around, you know, the players with him and that kind of thing, there is a gravitational pull towards Buki. He's one of those personalities. And I can't explain it really because he's not like Baker. Baker was larger than life. He was in your face. If he walked into the room, you knew he was there. There was never any doubt about being in his presence. With Buki, it's not that way. He's I wouldn't say withdrawn, but he's quiet. He's not a big, boisterous guy every time he walks into a room. But, man, if he is there, guys go and hang out with him, mm-hmm. want to sit with him. I haven't interviewed a kid from Florida to California all the way, you know, you go up anywhere north you want to go. Almost every guy I talk to, and I'm like, you know, do you know anybody at Oklahoma? Are you familiar with anybody there? Buki. I talked to Buki on Twitter. You know, like, he has such a big presence. It's really kind of hard to quantify it. And, you know, for people that would say, oh, he's just a, you know, he's a 5'9 corner that, you know, kind of, he couldn't possibly mean that much to you. Look at Tyrann Mathieu at LSU. Mm-hmm. That to me, that's the kind of comparison you're looking at. And I'm not saying he's going to be that good. I mean, obviously, that's an amazing player we're talking about. But I think that's what a guy can mean when he not only has the kind of persona and everything, you know, the image to sell, but also, like you said, can back it up on the field. Because as great as Baker Mayfield was on the field, if he wasn't the personality he is, it wouldn't be as enticing to everyone. He wouldn't be the name he was, because Baker Mayfield's more famous around college football than Sam Bradford ever was.
Yeah.
And their you know, career highlights are fairly similar. I mean, they did a lot of the same things, but I can't remember hearing many quarterbacks say, "Oh, I wanted to be like Sam Bradford." Mm-hmm. I'm already hearing guys talk about wanting to be like Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be said, that, especially in this day and age, there's a lot more about marketing and presentation than just being a great football player.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu, because it seems like maybe Buki wants to model himself after Mathieu. I think yesterday or the day before, he tweeted a picture of them side by side saying something about how, you know, he wants to be like that. So, and I think Tyrann Mathieu retweeted it. That's how I saw it, but that's that'd be obviously an amazing comparison for the Sooners. But Josh, thanks so much for joining me. I love talking about the Sooners, and this was such an exciting weekend for them. So I'm glad we got to hook up and talk about them a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely, Alex. Like I said, enjoyed it, man. It was it's always fun to get on and, you know, just have some conversations about different topics.
Yeah, definitely. Don't forget, you can find Josh on Twitter at JL McQuistion. That's McQuistion. That's his handle. Give him a follow. Check out his work for Soonerscoop.com. This was Fill in the Gap. Thank you very much for listening.